Let's resume our discussions. We're going to talk about primary financial statements. Aida?
Thank you, Hans. Good morning. Still just about another month, another set of PFS papers. This time we bring you three, ABC. We're going to discuss EBITDA as agenda paper 21A. We're going to discuss templates or examples as agenda paper 21B. And we're going to discuss minimum line items as agenda paper 21C. We have a couple of firsts this month, like we had last month. Very good. Last month was Frank's first board paper. We had very good discussions, so I would like to turn this into trend. So the first papers today have a very good discussion. But we are going to start with a paper that is not a first, so not Karwin's first paper. She's going to discuss EBITDA. But interestingly, her first board paper was on the topic of EBIT, so this kind of continuous trend. But before I hand over to Karwin, I'm just going to pause briefly in case there were any questions or comments on what is included in the cover note, including the topics that we are planning to bring to the board in future meetings.
So, agenda paper 21A discusses the presentation and disclosure of EBITDA type measures. And the paper consists of three main sections. So we first consider whether the presentation or disclosure of EBITDA should be required. Then we go on to consider how the board's tentative decisions on management performance measures should apply to EBITDA type measures. And then the last section proposes guidance on the use of the label EBITDA. And then we have Appendix A of the paper, which contains the results of our research on the current use of EBITDA. So before we discuss each of the sections in detail and go to the questions, we would like to ask whether board members have any questions about our findings from our research.
No? No.
So let's start with the first section then. So we think the board could consider requiring the presentation or disclosure of EBITDA, mainly because it is such a widely used measure by users in practice today. However, we recommend the board does not require presentation or disclosure of EBITDA for various reasons outlined in paragraphs 13 and 14 of the paper, which include that EBITDA often wouldn't fit as a subtotal in the statements of financial performance, and also stakeholders have raised concerns about the validity of EBITDA as a measure of performance. So the first question for the board is on page 7. Does the board agree with the staff recommendation that the board should not require presentation of EBITDA in the statements of financial performance or disclosure of EBITDA in the notes?
I agree with the staff recommendation. I don't think it should be a required subtotal in what we're proposing in our new format. My reasons for that view is that we've stayed with by nature and by function. We aren't changing that. And I don't think that all entities would be interested in doing an EBITDA subtotal. I don't think it fits in with this idea of choosing by nature or by function. Your research tells us that it's a widely used subtotal. And I think as long as within our structure, people are following our structure and they can disclose additional line items within our proposed structure and they can make an additional disclosure should they wish, but I wouldn't want to see it mandated. I don't think it fits.
Nick?
Thank you. So sometimes EBITDA is thought as being the work of the devil by certain stakeholders, but it's fair to say as a metric it has pros and cons. I think that's very fair. I used to use it. I used to forecast from EBITDA margins because I wanted to forecast depreciation and amortization. It was just the maths. I had to start with EBITDA margins. Having said that, I do back the staff's recommendation that we shouldn't require this as a... We should not require it as a subtotal within our proposals.
We agree with the staff recommendation.
14. I'm sorry. 13, one absent.
Hmm?
Who?
Yeah.
He's coming. He's on his way.
Okay, go on.
This is the opportunity to vote.
Okay, Okay, so moving on to the second section. So we think that overall treating EBITDA-type measures as management performance measures is the right approach, because the MPM disclosures will provide useful information to users of financial statements about how an entity has calculated its EBITDA-type measures. However, one potential issue with this approach is that the required MPM disclosure of the effect of tax and non-controlling interests may not be useful for depreciation and amortization. And we consider two possible approaches to avoid requiring such disclosure. Now, the first approach we considered is describing or defining EBITDA and adding it to the list of measures that are not considered management performance measures. However, we argue in the paper that the board should not pursue this approach because, on the one hand, it would provide a special treatment for EBITDA compared to other performance measures, and this again may not be appropriate considering the concerns that exist around the validity of EBITDA as a measure of performance. And then, in addition, we think this would probably require the board to define EBITDA or describe EBITDA in some way, which could be difficult for the reasons described in paragraph 27b. So that brings us to the second question for the board on page 10. Does the board agree with the staff recommendation that EBITDA should not be added to the list of measures that are not considered to be management performance measures?
Nick?
Thank you. First of all, to say thank you for the paper. I found the research incredibly helpful in understanding the dynamics around EBITDA. So to me, that was very important. It helped me crystallise my thinking. And apologies, because I can't actually help separate the two next sections of the paper. To me, they blur together, so I may drift into the next question. I think it's important that we do define EBITDA somehow. There's a common request from users, as reflected in the surveys of the CFA Institute, and also from regulators. ESMA, in its 2017 findings, said that we should look to define metrics such as EBITDA. So I think it's important. I am concerned that if it becomes a management performance measure, and thereby we require information around the tax and NCI adjustments on depreciation and amortization, we'll be asking the companies for information that is of no use to investors in these circumstances. Yeah. And that I find very difficult to comprehend. I find that completely uncomfortable. I would take a slightly different approach. And so I would think about EBITDA, as we thought about gross profit, as a defined but not required subtotal. And I would define it slightly differently from just taking the acronym. If we just take the acronym, literally take what the letters mean, it can't possibly fit into our P&L structure. It just won't work. So my preference would be take what staff illustrate on the back of the paper in the appendix to define it as operating profit before depreciation and amortization. In that way, it could fit into a by nature statement. The other advantage of that approach is that it avoids pulling up all other kinds of things from the investment section into an EBITDA definition. One of the pieces of very consistent feedback we are getting from users is that they like our definition of operating profit, that it is just for consolidated entities. Mm-hmm. We've heard this time and time again. This is a very important issue for users. And similarly, understanding from the research undertaken by staff that EBITDA is often used in segment analysis and hence will then be compared to revenue, and hence people would be working out a margin. Again, I prefer it to be a clean number, so from consolidated entities. So to home around that definition of operating profit before depreciation and amortization. Now, I appreciate that doesn't reflect exactly what the acronym spells out, and I think we have a trade-off here between issues, perhaps you could call it, around faithful representation and what's useful, actually. And I think there's much more use in a definition for users around operating profit before depreciation and amortization. It fits into our statement by nature. It avoids the issues around the tax and NCI, the uncomfortable issues about asking for information that nobody actually wants.
Yeah.
And so I would I would sort of make that leap of faith and say, actually, let's define this as EBITDA rather than just taking the acronym in its pure sense.
Can I ask you a question, Nick? So I don't feel that strongly on this topic. The one thing I want us not to end up doing is having a situation where EBITDA is a management performance measure, but then we sort of say, but you don't have to provide the reconciling stuff for the EPS because then it just gets even more complicated.
Yeah,
but your proposal addresses that. But I guess the question I have is if we say that we recognise this particular management performance measure as operating profit before depreciation and amortisation, so it fits in, which sounds sensible. One of the benefits of that, well, there's two benefits I think that you're getting at. One is that then we know what that number means and everybody will be doing the same thing if they use it.
Yep.
And secondly, it means that they don't have to provide the reconciling items in the same way as for gross profit.
Yep.
Do you or the staff have a sense of how often the number that management might want to use as their EBITDA would actually align with that operating profit thing to get us...
So that's in the research. Yeah. That's contained within the companies that you looked at. So I think...
Will it give us the relief we're looking for, I guess?
Yeah, so
maybe looking at paragraph A9 and A10 of the...
Sorry, which paragraph?
A9 and A10.
Yeah.
So these paragraphs don't have direct answer to Sue's questions because we focused on which one would meet the pure evidizing staff paper, but we have done... that research is just not in the paper. It is few of them, but to be honest, even in our sample, there was a big number of companies just use label EBITDA, and most of them did provide analysis of what it was, and there was just such a variation in practice. So I think if you hone into any one definition, you wouldn't find that many of them today would meet it, even if they describe it as pure EBITDA. But to Nick's point, I think our research and outreach suggests that the most useful one would be equivalent to what we define as operating profit less DA, although I have to say we might need to consider how we deal with impairment because I think, was it half of the companies
I think
in our sample?
Impairment would be part of that if it's part of operating assets, and then that, if you want to exclude it's an adjusted EBITDA measure, I think
then
that
they have to give the reconciliation
that has to, the on, the impairment items. On the impairment item, but not on the other items. So I think the research shows that it's sort of it's almost 50-50, isn't it? There's a slight majority that exclude non-consolidated entities, but it's so there's definitely diversity.
Okay.
Mary,
I'm prompted to comment now because it follows up on Nick's challenge here. Although I think my comment is maybe more with respect to question four rather than question two. I had been, and still am, supportive of the staff recommendation not to add and therefore have to define EBITDA to the list. But as I thought about the different issues you were exploring, when I got to question four, I basically said, I think that what we need to do, thinking about the context or a standard, is have a B paragraph, so Appendix B, which is in standards, which is authoritative material that amplifies what's in the standard, saying with respect to EBIT and the interaction, EBITDA, the interaction of EBITDA with the other general requirements, what I shorthand as the truth in labeling in terms of how it's described and what the constraints are. I think it's saying that if you use this label, you have to be, because it says there's an E in EBITDA, it has to be what's reported as an earnings number. It could be operating profit before or after integral associates. It could be operating profit plus investment, but this is, basically spelling out here are the things you have to think about and how we see the existing general requirements applying to this specific number. We're not saying you must define it this way, but here's what you have to be clear about what you're doing. So, for example, with the I piece of EBITDA, is it the financing section, of your P&L, or is it components of that I section, and does your adjustment for depreciation and amortization include or exclude, for example, the impairment issue? So I think rather than us defining it, what we should say, you know, we should have a paragraph, an application guidance paragraph, mandatory, that says with respect to EBITDA, here's how we see working through the general considerations when it comes to that number. Now, I could see, you know, when we get to the point, and we haven't decided yet, ED or DP, but, you know, when we get to an ED stage, if the majority support the staff recommendation to not add it to the list and not to define it, that we should say, if we were to define it, you know, we considered defining it, and if we were to define it, here's how we would have defined it, and kind of enumerate the pros and cons that Nick just went through about. There is diversity. Many have asked us to define it, but this would kind of constrain what, you know, what management is trying to communicate, and say basically, if you ask us to define it, this is what, you know, you're going to get at least approximately the definition. So we make sure we get feedback on that.
What we have here, Mary, is one is kind of this pure EBITDA faithful representation approach, where you have your ITDA, which I think you are describing. But the point we as a staff struggled with is that we don't think this is a useful measure as such. And, you know, taking aside the fact that, you know, there is a view that any kind of EBITDA is not useful, but this kind of EBITDA is not because of
EBITDA.
Exactly. So if we were actually to go about defining it as a staff, we would go with Nick's approach. I think that would outweigh the arguments in favor of the faithfulness, because ultimately we are about providing information that's useful. So it's, I just want to kind of
what I was trying to get to is saying, I think we should say, if we were to define it, we think this is how we would define it. And, you know, when we are doing standard setting, we can kind of break our own rules and say, this is, you know, this is why. And so get that, what Nick said out is, you know, perhaps we would all agree that the way we would define it, if we were trying to, is the way he described it, you know, what the most useful number is. Say, but given, you know, assuming that we decide not to define it, I think we can just walk through what the interaction of, if you call it EBITDA, look at what each of those letters in EBITDA means, and thinking of the general requirement for faithful labeling, here's what it means you have to be clear about. You know, here's what the implications of the E for, you know, is. Here's what the implications of I are. Here's what the implications of DNA are. And you could probably interpret it like DNA. You could interpret depreciation and amortization either as with or without impairment. But that's why it has to be clear what it is. And I think that's why reconciliation, you know, if we explain what it is and say, therefore, we would expect that to show in your reconciliation, assuming it's not, you know, a specified item, we would expect it to be clear what you do. So I, and this is, as I said, maybe more in respect to four, but there is a lot of interaction with two, you know, question two. I think we should be not defining it, not exempting it from reconciliation requirements, but taking the time, because it is so widely used today, to spell out what we think the implications are, so that we get clarity about what the number is. But I recognize that would be us giving up control, you know, over what people label EBITDA.
Could I just check if I understand what you're suggesting there, yeah. Mary? So essentially you'd be saying that, okay, we don't define or describe EBITDA, but what we do is to discuss the range of acceptable things that could be called earnings, the range of acceptable things that could be called interest, and then include some sort of requirement that says if you use the term EBITDA, you need to make sure that it's clear what choices you have taken around those range of acceptable.
And that you are within the range of acceptable. Yes, okay. That's exactly it. Thank you.
Tom. Yeah. I have a quick question for Nick and then two comments. So just on this issue of naming, would you, for that gross profit analogous measure, would the name be operating profit before depreciation and amortization? And I'll add a little bit. And would the links to the commonly used EBITDA be somewhere in a basis or wherever?
I don't know. I think if you've defined that as being what EBITDA is, you could use a title of EBITDA.
Okay.
Okay, I'm just worried about this sort of literalness that some people will be hung. Okay, so let me park that. It would be nice not if it could be elsewhere so that we don't run into the literal debate, but I'll leave that. I like the idea. My first comment is that it allows us, I'm not keen, if we're going to go back with respect to the tax reconciliations, I would like us to have a clear principle for opting stuff out. I certainly don't want us to be doing it on an ad hoc basis. There may be a good principle in there. I think that's the way we should do it if we go there. I'll kind of draw your attention to one thing, though, because I've thought about EBITDA has popped up for about 20 years in my head, the way it's used. And there's a neat line which sort of captures this in Appendix C. And it really struck me when I read it. It's C1A, and it just finishes with the clause, EBITDA is used as a proxy for operating cash flows. Mm. And I think this is why I think Nick is fundamentally right. If I use that sentence the way it's normally used, if you say A is a proxy for B, it's because you can't measure C, B directly, so you got to go and measure A. That's the way it's normally used. So I'm assuming that these people are also using that. And what it raises is if they're using that in preference, operating cash flows, well, for 20 years, there's been an operating cash flows available. So when they say this, it can't be the operating cash flows that we're supplying because they would use that. They have something else in mind. And I think that's where Nick has, I think, fundamentally hit on it. There is something else in mind. I think his definition is probably fairly close because for 20 years, I've always wondered if they keep saying this, why don't they just use operating cash flows? And I never got a good answer from anybody. And we can think of some of the things that come out. If you use operating cash flows, tax is still in there. There's a whole pile of other stuff. And I think Nick is closer to the construct. So I really think it might be worth exploring on that basis because everybody uses EBITDA. And I think they have a common construct that's different than what we put in the cash flow statement. And it's always a little bit different. But I think if we could produce something that comes close, that might be valuable. And I think Nick's suggestion is probably as close as anything I've heard.
Martin.
Yeah, I also think we can only answer this question together. And maybe Nick has a good proposal because on question three, I think also agreeing to Nick said it is, I think, not very useful if you would require then companies to prepare tax and NCI numbers for depreciation and amortization because nobody is using them. Because my understanding is because people want to have bottom to the EPS calculation because they adjust maybe for one-off items and non-usual items and then they want to have the tax impact and if they agree or not agree. But I think it's not a question for depreciation, amortization and EBITDA. And therefore, I really totally against having this as a management performance measure, which then requires this reconciliation, because I think cost-benefit would absolutely not in line with that. Also to the fourth question, because when I really think, because I said it also last time when we discussed EBIT, because I don't know why we think, okay, that we are concerned about what when people coming up with names of non-GAAP numbers, why we think we should give standards and regulation on non-GAAP numbers now here, because saying, okay, they cannot use it if they have element of interest included in that. When also it is a kind of, if we're discussing profit before tax, it is also when we include, okay, if it is a kind of earnings from associate and joint ventures, which have also tax elements, this number is also misleading, and we should also not, can maybe not using them, but we are using that. We are not concerned in this way, but we are concerned if people using this EBITDA, and I don't know, because when I think we should come up with what we have already done. Say, if people using this kind of management performance measures, then they should maybe have a faithful representation, a faithful name, what is included. But should we in detail say if they can use it or not and which terms they use? I don't know. It's not our business. Because I think our business is standard setting for our standards, but not for what people using as non-GAAP financial measures and if they using different names. And as I said, if we starting that with EBITDA, we have to do with EBIT, we have maybe to do it with profit before tax, and I don't know where we start, where we end with all these kind of things. Therefore, I think maybe a way forward is what Nick has said. Maybe it is a good idea to define that measure, and then we get rid of this reconciliation requirements. And then also, I think, if we have defined it, then it would make sense, okay, that people cannot use this term if they have different aspects than we have defined, and then they have to use maybe adjusted. But I think it is not our business if we have not defined a term to say, okay, if people using that term, they could use it in a way, but not in another term, because we have not defined it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And therefore, I agree maybe with what Nick said, maybe that is a good way forward to defining that, because it is what I heard also at CIMAC meetings, many, many people using that, and they would be helpful, even if it's not in the performance statement, to have it defined, and then, okay, people can using that. So I would agree what Nick has said, maybe that is a good way forward.
Sue?
Actually, Nick's arguments have quite a lot of appeal to me, so I wondered whether the staff had any things that they thought we should take into consideration, given it's different to your recommendation.
It is different to recommendation, but I wouldn't say I'm not recommending it. And we had a lot and lots of discussion around this issue. And the numbers, whatever we think of the EBITDA, the numbers speak for themselves. So our sample of 85 companies, we found 72 of them use it. And, you know, we as a staff felt, you know, that what we proposed in the paper was kind of consequential decisions based on where our discussions and the projects have been going so far. But when looking at these numbers, we did feel a great deal of discomfort at the measure, that the single most used measure, we actually not, you know, notwithstanding proposals for faithful labeling, but, you know, we were not positively including, plus causing costs to preparers that would not result in benefits to investors. So, you know, obviously the thing is around faithful representation and Tom's point around, you know, literal translation. We can consider it as a communication exercise, and I would say, you know, I would agree with Nick that we would need to refer then to EBITDA in the standard, but I would not refer to EBITDA as an acronym. I would refer to EBITDA as a name of EBITDA, and then have a discussion on the basis that, you know, we have basically rebranded EBITDA as EBITDA, and it's no longer earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, amortization, but it is EBITDA. And, you know, and it goes back to the point we discussed, I think, at last month's board meeting. You know, we have in our standards attempted to give things different names, but old names tend to persist. So maybe approach to take is to use the old names and just give them updated meaning. So even though it's not our recommendation, I mean, we staff support board's recommendation, if that's correct.
That's helpful.
Oh, that's very gracious of you.
Well, it's good to know. If they're objecting violently for some reason I was missing, it would be good to know.
I think the only thing that perhaps gives me pause for thought on this is around the discussions that we had last month around EBIT, where we effectively said that EBIT would only be these particular items, which is not the operating profit subtotal that we're talking about. So that sits quite uncomfortable with the idea that we then say in an EBITDA number, the earnings bit is effectively operating profit. And I think to some extent, to Aida's point about this being a consequential from other decisions, it was that EBIT decision where we said earnings doesn't equal operating profit, so we can't call so EBIT is not something that we can define. So that does sit a little bit awkwardly. We can probably describe explain where we've landed in the basis for conclusions, if that's where you want to land. The other thing that I think potentially gives me just pause for thought is that there is diversity in how people label EBITDA at the moment. We need to be aware of that. But and so what we pick on as being operating profit, excluding depreciation and amortization, may not make everybody happy because it won't be necessarily their measure of EBIT. But on the flip side, it does, similar to our decisions on operating profit, mean that we're effectively claiming the title and we get consistency between entities. So those are the things things I think we just need to think about if we go down this route.
It also addresses this cost-benefit point, which is one of the main things that Nick was focusing on, which is the fact that then we're not requiring them to provide this extra information that we don't actually think people need.
Yeah.
And even if it's not their view of EBITDA, and so they want to come up with their own, what would be then adjusted EBITDA that's slightly different to ours, at least they've only then got to provide the information for the incremental items rather than the bits we definitely know aren't useful. So I think that's, for me, relevant and slightly different to the discussion we had last time.
Nick has a solution.
So I appreciate there's awkwardness around the relationship with the EBITDA debate that we had last month. I think that, and I hear what Mary says about potential to do application guidance, but I still go back to almost the raison d'etre of the project, which is to help improve comparability and help take away diversity around some of these subtotals. So I would have a preference for defining it as, say, that's what we hear from the CFA Institute, that's what we hear from regulators, that it'd be best to be a defined measure and we take ownership of it. I think also it brings a degree of simplicity into the accounting rather than say, actually, here's some application guidance, go and work it out for yourself. And with the diversity that follows. So I'd go back, I think, to say that, you know, we define EBITDA operating profit before depreciation, say depreciation amortization as a permitted but not required subtotal, as we've done with gross profit, and then the issues about the reconciliation proper way. And even if you adjust it for associates, there are clearly no tax or NCI issues around associates and joint ventures anyway, so those fall away. An adjusted EBITDA number.
I'm convinced.
Okay.
Amaru.
Thanks, Hans. I actually didn't think in the same way as Nick developed his idea, but I really appreciate his idea. I think it's a very good way for us to deal with probably the most commonly used, I would say, KPI. By most companies. In some jurisdictions, I guess in Brazil, it's defined by the securities regulator. So we might end up with, during the exposure draft process, having to interact with regulators to see if they do eventually have or had in the past defined that this is a piece of regulation, how we are going to deal with that. This might be the case, another thing. But I think Nick's idea is excellent. So I have two questions. One was actually the commented by Rachel, the connection between what we are discussing here with the decisions on EBIT. I don't know how we are going at the end of the day to connect and make those two consistent. And my question is more into, we are talking about concepts. So sometimes we call here in the discussion, well, it's concept, let's conceptualize it as operational profit plus or minus. And also there is the concept that was brought by your research and was referred by Tom. Well, EBIT is a proxy for operational cash flow. So when you talk about concept in your mind, we are talking about, well, EBIT means operational plus. It's the components of the calculation, or we are going to conceptualize what EBIT means. Those are two different aspects.
I don't foresee us conceptualizing what the EBIT means, but I will let Nick, if he has any...
I think it means different things to different people. People use it in a whole variety of different ways.
Yes.
And I think it's almost not our territory in this respect to concept. That's analysis.
So really. When we talk about concept, we are talking about the components.
Yeah.
It's not really a concept.
Some people use it as a proxy for free cash flow. I use it just as the mechanics of starting my valuation.
That's absolutely fine because if I think about conceptualizing something, I think it's more difficult.
Yeah.
It's more challenging for the board to really conceptualize what this measure represents. If we're talking about concept in a way of components of how to calculate, I think this we can do easily. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that I think we should bear in mind when progressing further with the idea.
François?
Like others, I mean, I see some appeal in what Nick is saying, but I would not want to decide on the fly. And I think there are, on these subjects of management performance measures, subtotals, a lot of interrelations between the various decisions made, the inclusion within paragraph 81 of a subtotal that is not required, but that provides exemptions for reconciliation, what with paragraph 85. And then, I mean, Aida has gone a bit further with even suggesting, you know, the name could be retained. It would not be an acronym; it would be a name. Well, I'm not completely at ease with all this. Especially, we have, and that's a requirement that I have a lot of. I find very important is that the labelings are understandable. And I really prefer a reliable acronym or moving to operating profit before depreciation and amortization than wanting to stick to a label that is widely used with different definitions. So, and I don't want to eliminate alternatives just, you know, without having a bit more time to think. And not, you know, wake up in a week and say, but I disagree with what we've decided because I didn't realize the implications. So, in short, I would welcome that this comes back on the basis of Nick's proposal, but with having all the implications well analyzed so that we really know where we're going.
Doc.
Thank you. The simple question to Nick. It's appealing, but I would like to know about the interaction between by nature or by function presentation. Mm-hmm. So we need amount of depreciation and amortization. So that's come with by nature basis. Mm-hmm. So if the company is presenting by function, mm-hmm. then automatically it will be shown in the notes. Is that your idea?
Well, my understanding, I think it's sort of set out in the staff paper that we've made decisions already about by function and by nature,
yeah,
and that it could only fit in on the face in terms of a by nature
right
approach. I can't see how it could. There may be solutions. I don't see how it could. So I guess that would then take it into a note disclosure.
Okay.
But still, it would be because defined, if we went with this approach, entities that analyze expenses by function would still be exempt from the, you know, tax and NCI in the notes, but, you know, they'll be required to provide information about DA if that's not on the face.
Mm-hmm. Gary?
Thank you. It, actually see a lot of appeal in Nick's suggestion, but I agree with Francois. I think it needs some more development before we can finalize it. And instinctively, I think most EBITDA we see in practice is realistically probably an adjusted EBITDA. And companies might call it EBITDA, but against the definition we're working on against question four, I think almost all cases it's going to be adjusted. I also think with IFRS 16 coming online next year, all of a sudden rent expense today becomes depreciation interest expense tomorrow, which materially is going to affect, you know, if you've got a lot of operating, today's operating leases, it's going to have implications for the EBITDA calculation. Actually, it makes EBITDA get better. But I think that needs to be factored in here. And, you know, kind of reflecting back, I think in the corporate treasury types tend to think of EBITDA differently than perhaps this room or corporate controller types, because they'll be thinking EBITDA vis-a-vis the major debt agreements of the organization, which will probably be defined. And they make a differential between, I'll call it, capital markets debt and operating liabilities that happen to be discounted and which you accrete an interest on them. So I think they see them differently. So philosophically on board with where it is, but I do think it needs more development.
Mary?
I wanted think my thinking very much what Francoise and Gary were saying. I think today's discussion has changed my mind from supporting the staff recommendation in question two to wanting to explore defining it and what the implications are. But I don't want to commit today to saying, yep, that's how, you know, I want to do it, and I want to do it, and here's how I want to do it. Because I do think, Rachel, the point you raised about the interaction with our previous decision on EBIT is very important, because I don't buy that we can duck the issue by saying, well, EBIT is an acronym, but EBITDA is a term, and therefore you can have a different meaning of EBIT for the purpose of EBIT, the acronym, and EBITDA, the term. I think we're just, that would be too cute. I think we've got to think through what the implications are of exploring this on the, you know, the interaction with the previous decision, and if it raises any issues. So I'd actually, rather than trying to do it on the fly, I think I'd rather just say, could you bring back the exploration of trying to define it in question two, and then looking back at that previous decision, whether it creates any tensions that weren't explored here because you're making a different recommendation.
Try to answer those questions, but I don't know if you want me to. You prefer not to, kind of, because I think because we have given it lots of thought, and I think we can resolve all of that. And I just am a bit conscious of us. I understand you want to think about this more, but I'm conscious that actually we're not setting a concept, as Amara says. This is not going to be required. All we are doing is specifying measure that's going to be exempt from MPM. So I don't want to overplay the amount of work we need to do, especially given the amount of, you know, other work we still have to do on the project. So, I mean, I accept if this is a decision, we will go back and do this. And maybe just a brief comment on previous month. I think previous month decision that the profit before financing and income tax is not EBIT remains. What the approach that we are considering today would mean that essentially I think it would be operating profit would become equivalent to EBIT if companies were to use EBIT in the financial statements. And then we would have to kind of put a similar communications around it as we do with EBITDA, but not to suggest we would refer to operating profit as EBIT. And to Francoise's point, I think the main discussion and examples would refer to operating profit and operating profit before depreciation and amortization. But, you know, we would have a discussion somewhere in application guidance to say that it is acceptable and these are what is widely referred to practice as EBIT and EBITDA. And again, I don't want to, you know, feel like I'm forcing this now, but I'm just keen not to spend, you know, 2 months on this where all we're doing is scoping out something from MPM requirements.
But what you're really telling us, if you thought about a lot of these issues, so it won't take you much time to develop this.
Thanks.
It will take time. I mean, you need to write a paper.
Right. Yeah.
I think if all we're trying to do is, whether we bring it back or we voted on it today, is all we're saying is that effectively operating profit becomes earnings for the purposes of both EBIT and EBITDA. I think that should be something fairly straightforward for us to do, and we can bring that back fairly easily and straightforwardly. I think where it becomes more problematic is if you want us to look at alternative ways in which EBITDA could be defined, because that would require quite a significant amount of additional work. The work that we've done so far would seem to suggest to us that the most useful way to define EBITDA would be the way Nick has suggested, which is operating profit plus depreciation and amortization. But that would be a change for some people. I think Amara's point about regulators, we may find that some regulators out there have defined it differently, and we need to be aware of that. So if all we're doing is restricting it to exploring the implications of defining operating profit plus depreciation and amortization as EBITDA, I think that should be something fairly straightforward for us to do.
Okay. That's good to know. Tom, and then Françoise, and then...
Just a small follow-up. I think, first of all, just on the last comment, I think you'll be able to write something reasonable in the basis like for now, forge ahead in explaining why we did it. But just on what TAC raised, when you bring it back, I think given the high proportion of entities that use functional, many, many of them use EBITDA, and you're going to need to address what Nick said. He said maybe we put it in a note. Please kind of address that, because I don't think we want it to do it and then exclude the functionals. I think you need to pull the people who report on a functional basis in. So if you could include that when you bring it back, please.
Françoise?
Well, I wanted to make that point, that exact point that Tom has made, and highlighting that paragraph 81 refers to subtotals which are on the face. But we have decided to require the income statement by nature to be provided in the notes. So I think it should be, the effect of paragraph 81 to the note of the income statement by nature should be encompassed by the effects of that decision. And the other, I know we just said that we would try to have that as narrow as possible, but I have some thoughts for the people that, despite calling that EBITDA, did draw the line before impairment. And I wouldn't want this to be done without having depreciation, amortization, and impairment being mentioned. But nevertheless, if there are good reasons for not having the same approach to one and the other, then I think we should display those good reasons, because otherwise I don't see why we would treat these two subtotals differently.
Okay, so I guess we're going to vote about the next proposal, which is to...
They're going to bring it back. I think it's essentially question two we're asking you to vote on, which is to say, do you want us to define EBITDA just to sort of go around that and say the way we would be looking to define it would be along the lines of Nick's proposal, but we would bring back a paper that would explain what that looks like and the implications.
Then can we take the vote when we have the paper?
Yes.
Yeah. If you take the vote on question two now, I think what you'll find is that you don't get a majority supporting, and so I think then the follow-up is to bring back the paper.
Okay.
What shall we do, Chair? We have more papers, but there's only 10 minutes.
Let's have lunch, and let's get back at 1:30.
1:30.